Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the first day of October 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. And a bit later in the program, Matt Bennett will join us from Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. He'll update us on the cash grain market and what's been happening on the farms in his area. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a closer look at the weather system that's moving through southern Illinois right now. It may very well combine with Hurricane Joaquin, and if it does, that'll put a real big punch into the East Coast storm system that's supposed to hit and really create havoc in the next several days. And we'll do that all right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for a Thursday afternoon. Corn pit futures were higher, at least in the nearby contracts. December up a penny at $3.88¾. The March at $3.99¾ up one, and May up ¾ at $4.06¼. July was unchanged at $4.10¾. December of next year down a quarter at $4.10¾. Soy complex November beans $8.77¼, $14¾ lower. January at $8.80¾, down $13¼. In the March contract, $8.84¾, 12½ lower. The May down 11½, July down 10¾, August down 10, and next year's November soybeans down 9¾ at $8.83½. Bean meal futures finished $5.70 lower at $3.0260, and the bean oil at $27.09 finished a penny lower for the day. Soft red winter wheat in the December contract up 5½ cents at $5.18¼ a bushel. July futures up 2¾ at $5.29¾. Hard red July at $5.41¾ finished 5¾ cents higher. Feeder cattle in the October were down $2 and a nickel at 176.12½. November at 170.67½, down $1.92½. And the live cattle futures were down $4.27½ for the lead option. That's the October contract at $120.40. December at $128.85, down $2.75. And lean hogs on the day, 92½ cents lower in the October at $72.60. You're listening to Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Here are the way and some of the numbers are trading in the outside markets. November crude oil at $44.95 a barrel, down 14 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.59¼, that's up 5⅞ of a cent per gallon. The gasoline on the RBOB, the wholesale price, up 2⅓ of a cent. That's trading at $1.36¼ of a cent. Heating oil for the day, or diesel fuel, at $1.52½, down a penny and 2 cents. Natural gas at $2.43¼, 9⅓ of a cent lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is off 38 points at 16,133. And the U.S. dollar at 96.33 is down 0.155. Gold futures on the day are trading the December contract at $1,112.75 per troy ounce. That's down $2.45. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. 65 degrees and sunny. Tonight, clear and 44. Northeast winds this evening at 11 to 14. They'll continue to gust all the way to 20 miles an hour this evening. They're gusting to 28 today. Friday, mostly sunny skies and 65 degrees. Again, the northeast winds at 15 to 18, gusting to 26. And Saturday, mostly cloudy, a high of 61. Northeast winds at 15 to 18, gusting to 28. On Sunday, cloudy skies and 67. Monday, mostly sunny and 70. Tuesday, sunny and 72. And on Wednesday, partly sunny skies and 77. Lows in that time frame, the low 50s to the upper 40s. More on the weather at the bottom of the half hour.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's a Thursday afternoon, the very first day of October. Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas now joins us. Thanks for being with us, Dan. When we talked this morning, you were a little concerned with the soy complex, especially the beans, wondering whether the pressure that might come to bear, hedge pressure that is, that might come to bear today would put a downward movement into that marketplace. In fact, it has. How do you see it?
Well, worst, you know, I think when you talk to farmers, everybody seems to be reasonably happy with their yields. And I think that is working its way into the marketplace when, you know, as a rule, when farmers end up getting better than expected yields, they turn more willing sellers of that commodity. Now, whether or not we saw that come into the close or not, but the grain trade knows what's going on out there, and they're probably seeing some of that come to town and going to put some downward pressure on it. And I just, the corn, I think everybody's still waiting yet. You're a lot of highly variable yields, but we'll see what USDA, you know, gives us on this October crop report, whether or not we get any yield changes, whether or not we get any acreage changes, we could see some there. But I think the overall trend of beans losing ground to corn or corn gaining ground on soybeans is going to be a fairly dominant trend for the next several months. I mean, it's been that way for the last 12 months or several months, and I think that's going to continue to be the case. Because I think, you know, long term, I'm looking for that corn soybean ratio to move to 2-to-1 or 1.9-to-1. And I think that's just, I don't think that's going to happen overnight, but I do think that's going to be the long term trend on soybeans. And especially if these beans are coming in as good as what at least I've heard so far. And then, even though we did see a downward adjustment in old crop ending stocks or beginning stocks, we're still looking at a 400 million type carryout for next year. And that's going to take a lot to move the needle. I mean, we're going to have some pretty serious weather problems in South America to get the soybean market to perk up under that weight, I think, of soybeans, or at least in the short term here anyway.
Yeah, 2-to-1. Let's just talk about corn, and we'll know where you think soybeans might be, I suppose. What do we think the technicals are telling us, you, about the corn market and where December corn might be able to go?
Well, when you look at the raw chart, I mean, we are in a sideways to higher trend. Now the beans have been probably more of a sideways type trading affair. We've been kind of in a 40 cent trading range, for the month of September. And I mean, I did like the way we did close out the month of September. Both corn and soybeans did close higher. And that's usually a positive sign that the month of October, would be an up month. Today is the first day. I don't know if you want to get too worried about the first day, but it's just, you know, beans can kind of stay in this trading range until we get toward the end of harvest. And we know that we've got a long ways to go as we move northwest. So, you know, when I take a look at, I guess, July corn, I think July corn is somewhere around 410. I think July soybeans are around, what, 890 or something like that?
893.5.
Okay, so if corn can stay in the $4 futures range, and that's if, let's say, and you go 2-1, well, then that means that soybeans,
right now we're at 820. So 820 on beans if you're 2-1.
Right.
And so, at 893 and a half for July.
Yeah, so I think, you know, so when I look at the ratio pattern and the cyclical patterns of that ratio, I think that's where the greatest risk is. And, of course, again, if corn would slip back to, let's say, 275 or not 275. Let's hope we don't go that low. Let's say 375. Well, then that just, you know, then that puts the beans in the sevens, and that is what's scary. But that's not, again, I don't want to scare anybody. I don't mean to scare anybody. But that is going to probably depend upon how big of crop South America produces and whether or not they have some weather issues, you know, as we go down the road. But there's really nothing on, I mean, you do have to be impressed by the demand that we've seen in beans here over the past 30 days. We had, you know, the weekly number was quite big. We knew we were going to get a big weekly number because we have these daily sales. I think we had another one here today. So bean demand is real good and is trying to catch up to last year's pace. Corn showed improvement, but it's still behind the eight ball on that. And I just don't, I wish I could tell the listening audience that there's reason to be excited about the upside on this market. But I just really have a hard time seeing anything real bullish, at least in the near term. Now, the thing that I am watching, I do think there is a lot of turbulence that's going to happen in the stock market, the currency markets, and the bond markets, and how that may impact ag commodities or commodities as a group is going to get a little tricky. But I do think there's a lot of volatility that's ahead of us in the currency markets, the bond market, and the stock market because of all of this 0% money that's been bubbling everything up over the past several years, and the air is coming out of that bubble, and how that, you know, impacts global demand and how that comes back. It gets the Illinois, Indiana farmer here, or the Midwestern farmer, or all farmers in the United States, still remains to be seen. But it still looks like there's downside risk in this market as we move forward, at least for the time being anyway.
We'll talk more in just a half hour or so. Thanks, Dan. I'm looking forward to having you on Commodity Week this week.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting. He's out of Waco, Texas, and will be one of our panelists on Commodity Week. Bill Mayer will join us, along with Jason Clapp. We'll record that at about 3 o'clock Central Time, 40 minutes away now. And then we'll post it up to the website this evening. Should be there maybe 5:30, something along those lines. Might be a good time for you to figure out how to use the Bluetooth in the combine or the tractor or maybe the semi-tractor cab. And you could listen to it before we get to it tomorrow afternoon on the air. It airs actually on our home station, many of these radio stations, tomorrow at 2:36. That's Commodity Week, our weekly look at the commodity markets. A couple of other things to remind you of. If you've been in the field, I know you've been working hard all day long. Right now, why don't you shut the machine off or when you get to the end of the rows there and take a 10-minute nap. That'll help you out for the rest of the day. You're going to be really busy. The weather's going to be clear, at least in our immediate area and across much of the Midwest for the next several days. And you've already been hard at it. A little nap will help you out, I promise, and it'll keep you safe. Your spouses will be really happy that you managed to take care of that, too. They worry about you at this time of year. If you're on the by roads and you happen just to be listening to the program, be careful out there because this machinery's big, it's heavy, and you don't want to hit it. It wins every time. Every time you run into it, that big machinery wins. So go slow, and we'll get the harvest in. We'll do it in a good and easy time. All right, let's move on with the program. You're listening to Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. In today's agricultural news, the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiators are continuing their talks in Atlanta, Georgia today with the possibility of reaching an agreement. That before the end of the week, the Atlanta Business Journal reports the current round of talks is expected to be the final round as well. Trade ministers and negotiators last met in July and failed to reach a deal. Meanwhile, New Zealand's Prime Minister John Key, who represents one of the 12 member nations included in the TPP talks, said in New York, "I think there's actually a chance it could be completed this week," adding there are significant negotiations being undertaken in Atlanta. The window to complete a deal is closing for now ahead of Canada's elections later this month and the U.S. election cycle heading into 2016. However, Canadian officials have vowed they're ready to open market access for dairy. That's a sticking point in the deal. Once all nations can reach an agreement, it still must be passed by the governments of all 12 countries and could be open to further amendments offered by lawmakers. That might delay the final implementation even further. Well, MarketWatch is reporting that just three commodities have avoided losses in what is one of the worst quarters for commodities and stocks since 2011. Rough rice, cocoa, and cotton are the only major traded commodities to see price climb since the beginning of the year. Lumber, coffee, and aluminum have suffered the largest declines year to date. Adam Kuss, president of Libertas Wealth Management Group, told MarketWatch, "China's currency devaluation and their drop in lumber imports could be one factor contributing to the drop. Lumber futures have seen the largest drop so far this year, down by nearly some 35% as the start of this week." From commodities, we'll go to machinery makers. Deere is working on a new labor agreement with the United Auto Workers, with profits shying away from the record levels just a couple of years ago. Deere & Company is now working on a new labor agreement with its union employees. The current six-year contract expires today. Talks are underway between Deere and UAW to reach a new labor contract covering some 10,000 employees. Most of those employees make farm and construction equipment in Iowa and Illinois. The union is likely to work under the current contract until a new deal can be reached. A strike does not seem likely. One expert said there may be a 10% chance. Last time Deere workers went on strike was in 1986, when workers sat out 163 days. And finally today, a tour-friendly pork packaging facility has been proposed in California. Meeting Place reports Capital Cultivators has submitted a proposal to the Turlock, California Planning Commission to build a pork packing facility in an industrial park. The facility would include easy accessibility for tour groups and visitors as part of the design. Company head Michael Lau says, "We see an opportunity to educate and let people see where their food comes from." A permit hearing on the project is scheduled for early November. Several other food processors are nearby, but their facilities cover nuts, cheeses, and other goods. According to the planning documents, the facility would process 400 tons of meat annually in a 102,000-square-foot plant on a 10-acre site. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Find us online at willag.org. Well, you know, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works came under some blistering fire from Senate Republicans over the waters of the U.S. rule. That happened yesterday. Joellen Darcy stood her ground. She insists it was her decision to make as Assistant Secretary for Civil Works. Darcy gave that response despite highly critical memos from the Army Corps of Engineers Deputy Commanding General that BOTUS is flawed and that the Corps' name and logo should be removed from documents supporting the rule. This exchange is between Darcy and Senate Environment Public Works Chair James Inhofe.
"Now, if the Corps refused to claim authorship of these documents, why do you put the Army's name on them?"
"Because the Army does support the rule and the documents and the development of the rule."
"Isn't it the job, though, of the Corps of Engineers to make the statements that, on which their support is going to be based?"
"It is the job of the Army Corps of Engineers to inform me as well as others as to their experience and expertise, and it's up to me to make a final decision."
Darcy disputes Major General John Peabody's claim that the economic analysis behind WOTUS is wrong, insisting her economists agree with it. More than 30 states oppose WOTUS. Some 21 lawsuits are pending, and a federal judge in North Dakota enjoined the Environmental Protection Agency from implementing the rule in 13 states. American Farm Bureau and many other farm groups see it as a huge regulatory overreach and land grab. But Nebraska Republican Deb Fisher says it's not just about farmers.
We hear that all the time. Farmers and ranchers are going to be hit by this rule. You bet they are. My neighbors are going to be hit by it. But also, our natural resource districts are opposed. Our cities are opposed. Our counties are opposed. Our homeowners are opposed. Our home builders are opposed. Our associated general contractors are opposed. So it's a wide group of stakeholders.
Chairman Inhofe vowed to continue all efforts to stop WOTUS. He says his constituents see it as the most significant raid on their property rights ever. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're working to get hold of Matt Bennett at this point. He is out on the farm in Windsor, Illinois, maybe back in 40 where he doesn't quite have cell phone activity, but we'll talk a little bit about the weather forecast and see if we can't catch up with him in a moment. Sunny skies this afternoon, a high of 65 degrees and a north-northeast wind, by the way, at 16 to 18 miles an hour. That'll gust all the way to 28, and then clear skies for this evening. A low of 44, northeast winds at about 11 to 14, and sunny skies tomorrow, a high of 65. We'll continue with northeast wind at 15 to 18 right into Friday night with a low of 46 and mostly cloudy skies on 61 degrees. And Saturday, we'll have a mostly cloudy evening and 49. Sunday, mostly cloudy and 67. Sunday night, cloudy and 51. Monday, sunny and 70 degrees to start the work week. Partly cloudy with a low of 50 on Monday evening. And Tuesday, mostly sunny skies and a high of 72 degrees. A couple of things that are coming up that we probably also ought to take up. Next week, we begin our fund drive, and I do want to talk to you a little bit about that. I'm going to try not to hit you too hard on it, but I really do need you to participate in that process. That's next week. We'll begin our fund drive. For those of you who don't know, of course, we're public radio, and we do really depend on you to help us out. I think the number's about 40%, so if you can help out, we'll be looking forward to that. The other thing is that coming up in the month of November will be the second annual Farm Assets Conference. It's on Tuesday this year, not on Monday. Last year we did it on Monday in Bloomington Normal. This year it's on Tuesday. We'll be there. I know that's the commodity conference today, if most of you are used to going to it. In fact, we will be the Commodities Conference. The annual meetings of each of the associations will take place, if they normally do, and then we'll take over with the Farm Assets Conference. We'll open up some of that, not next week, well, to next week for a few of you who were there last year, and then the following week. So put it in your calendar at this point, because it should be a fantastic day. That is the 24th of November. It's the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving, just the same week, and we look forward to having you in Normal, Illinois. In a couple of minutes, I'll be back. We'll talk about the weather forecast. Mike Tenora will be here from T-Storm Weather. Some really interesting information from him about Hurricane Joaquin and what it might do with a little Midwestern storm making its way through
southern Illinois. Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
It's Agricultural Fair Day. It's also World Vegetarian Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1795, Robert Bakewell died. An agriculturalist, he helped revolutionize cattle and sheep breeding in England. He obtained the best animals he could find, and then he worked with a closed herd, inbreeding only superior animals. In 1908, the Model T Ford was introduced at a price of $825. Due to efficient mass production, by 1925, the price of a two-door Model T was only $260. In 1913, a monument to honor seagulls was erected in Salt Lake City. the gulls had eaten a plague of grasshoppers that threatened the Mormon settlers' crops in 1848. In 1972, Lewis Leakey died, an archaeologist and anthropologist. He was largely responsible for convincing scientists that Africa was the place to search for human origins, not Java or China. And in 1980, European community countries banned the use of hormones in cattle feed. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. Let's check in on the weather forecast now with Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, it looks like there's a mighty big storm in the Atlantic. Can you tell me a bit about Joaquin and its potential course?
It will have a big impact across the United States and in Canada. The real question regards its path. This system has been unusual in a number of different ways. Probably the biggest way it's been unusual is in how rapidly it's formed. Just as recently as 3 days ago or so, we knew there could be some type of system in the Caribbean, but we did not think that it would turn into a major hurricane. Well, in a matter of days, it went from being nothing to a major hurricane, and it's already approaching Category 4 status. Category 5 is the highest level of hurricane that's possible. This hurricane at this point in time is expected to have sustained winds of 140 miles an hour. It would need to get to 155 miles an hour to reach that Category 5 status. It did form an eye at around 8 in the morning Central Time today. The eye has been kind of fluctuating where it forms and then it goes away. You really need that eye to form to keep this thing going at a real high and strong level. But regardless of whether it reaches Category 4 or 5 status, it will start to move north, and then it will start to interact with a different system. That system is actually located over southern Illinois today. That system is moving into the southeast, and these two storms are going to interact in some fashion, and that's where things start to get a little bit tricky.
So what happens if they combine, and what happens if they don't combine?
Well, if they combine into one, that would be probably the worst-case scenario, because then we would end up with a storm system similar to Hurricane Sandy back in 2012. Now, Hurricane Sandy was a major hurricane. It was really big. We're not currently expecting something like that, but something similar where you take a non-tropical system in the Midwest and you combine it with a tropical system in the Atlantic Ocean. They combine into one really big system and eventually result in a hurricane striking somewhere in the East Coast, most likely somewhere around the North Carolina to Washington, D.C. area. That would be scenario number one. The other scenario would be where they remain independent systems. If that were to occur, that would be a better scenario for the United States because the hurricane would stay in the ocean and basically ride parallel to the East Coast, thereby preventing a direct strike on the United States. But regardless of which one of these scenarios happens, we're going to see a lot of heavy rain from South Carolina right on into New York City. We're looking for widespread 3 to 6 inch totals in some areas, could even see upwards of a foot. Now, to put that in perspective, if we were talking about widespread snow of 12 inches, that would get people excited. But we're talking about rain, so this is a major event, and it will lead to flooding across parts of the East Coast. That will also include some of the soft red winter wheat belt. By our estimation, around 20% of the soft red winter wheat crop could be affected. But again, either one of these scenarios could happen. We really won't know until sometime tomorrow, and maybe not even until Saturday morning. This would take place basically from today through about Monday or Tuesday, then it would all be over.
Thanks, Mike, for the update.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great day.
Mike Tenor is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois, and joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.